This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 7, entitled The Sacrifice Performed by Daksha.
Ashamshashte deva marich yadhaya ete brahmendradya deva gana rudra purugaha kridha bhandham vishvam idam yashya vibhumam man tasmain jimnatat Namaste Karavamya.
Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The Gandharva said, "Dear Lord, all the demigods, including Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Indra, and Marichi, and the great sages, are all only differentiated parts and parcels of your body. You are the Supreme Almighty Great. The whole creation is just like a plaything for you. We always accept you as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we offer our respectful obeisances unto you." Purport: in the Brahma Samhita it is said that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There may be many gods, from Brahma, Lord Shiva, Indra and Chandra, down to the rulers of the lower planetary systems, the presidents, ministers, chairmen, kings, GBC, temple presidents. In fact, anyone can think that he is God. That is the false, puffed-up conviction of material life. Actually, Vishnu is the Supreme Lord, but there is even one above Vishnu, for Vishnu is the plenary portion of a part of Krishna. In this verse, this is referred to by the word amshamshaha, which refers to part and parcel of a part and parcel. There are similar verses in Chaitanya Charitamrita which indicate that the Supreme Lord's parts and parcels again expand into other parts and parcels. As described in Srimad Bhagavatam, there are many manifestations of Vishnu and many manifestations of living entities. Vishnu manifestations are called Shvamsha, partial manifestations, and the living entities are called Vibhinamsha. The demigods like Brahma and Indra have been promoted to such exalted positions by pious activities and austerity. But actually Vishnu or Krishna is the master of everyone. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita it is said, Ekala Ishvara Krishna Ara Shababhritya. This means that Krishna alone is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and all others, even the Vishnu Tattva, and certainly the living entities are His servants. Baladev is the immediate expansion of Krishna. He also engages in the service of Krishna, and certainly the ordinary living entities are serving. Everyone is created constitutionally for serving Krishna. Here, the Gandharvas acknowledge that although the demigods may represent themselves as supreme, actually they are not supreme. Real supremacy belongs to Krishna. Krishna Shtu Bhagavan Swayam is the statement of Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna is the only Supreme Lord. Worship of Krishna alone, therefore, includes worship of all the parts and parcels, just as watering the root of a tree also waters all the branches, twigs, leaves, and flowers. Oh, obviously, the subject matter of today's verse is demigods. We have discussed this time and time again throughout many years in Krishna consciousness, but as Srila Prabhupada often states, the repetition of something is necessary to fully grasp the fact. So we will also, again, speak about demigods today. Actually, demigod is a Greek word. It means, as it says, demi means half god. So a demigod is like half god. Sanskrit word is, as here in the verse, devata. But either demigod or devata, as we say in Sanskrit, it means the same thing. It means an empowered living being. By the Lord's grace, a jivatma, a tiny infinitesimal part and parcel of the Lord, can be empowered to do very amazing things above and beyond our present limited capacity. In human society, we see there's the, even human society, there's the big and the small, the the great and the insignificant. But even if you're the greatest of the great, you can only run so fast. You can only swim so far. You can only climb so high. There'll be a limit. Every 4 years there's the Olympics, so sometimes records are broken, but they're broken by a fraction of a second or a millionth of a second. There's nothing really astounding. Someday they'll reach the limitation of human capability. But there are amongst the jivas very powerful personalities who control the rain, like Indra, or the wind, like Vayu, or the sun shine, like Surya. They're just like you and me, I mean, essence. But how do they achieve these, what we would call mystic powers? By the grace of Bhagavan, by the grace of God, to perform a particular service which is required, and that's to manage. To manage what? Not to manage a temple or to manage a city or to manage a region or a state or a country or the whole world, but to manage the cosmic manifestation. This requires a lot of mercy. So that comes from Krishna. So that's demigod. That's devata. And there's millions of them. How many? 30-something crores, Pilad? What's 30 crores? Some fantastic number. And they also fall into different categories, the big guys and little guys. There's some demigods who are very powerful, and there's some who are just little, chut-chut, little powerful. Like this verse is today is spoken by the Gandharvas. You see the Gandharvas in Renaissance paintings. I don't know where they got the idea. Oh, they got the idea from Christian tradition. Angels. Gandharvas. Yes, here we have Gandharva on the painting of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Chota Haridas. He was an intimate associate of Mahaprabhu, but he made some mistake. He gave up his life and he became Gandharva. Gandharvas are very beautiful. Angelic, when you want to describe someone as beautiful, they're very angelic. You look like an angel. I like to look like an angel. Demigods are beautiful. Gandharvas are very beautiful and very good singers. Sweet voices. Everyone wants them to lead the kirtan. When it comes time for Mangal Arti, can you lead? Gandharva. And lots of different far things. They can fly in the sky. And how do they fly? They have wings. Flap, 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 flap. And they fly and they sing. These are Gandharvas. And they're like considered minor demigods. They're not the big guys or the little guys, but they're powerful, superior to the human beings of the earth. And they're of course, demigods means that Svargalok, so they're above the earth planet. But above them are other demigods and other demigods. You can refer to Vedic scriptures. Brihad Bhagavatamrita also gives a bit of a synopsis of the celestial region there. But we can jump to the top. There's the Manus. Manus are even more powerful. They're progenitors. What did Maharaj call them yesterday? Baby factories or something. They are progenitors. They create species of life within the material world. The material world is created and the living entities are injected into the material world. And the whole process, a refined process, different progenitors, demigods, they propagate different species of life. 8,400,000 species of life. So it all stops, it all comes up there somewhere. Filters down. So those who propagate, the progenitors of mankind, the Manus, the word man comes from Manus, Srila Prabhupada says. They make the human species. They're powerful. And they're even more powerful than the fact they just can create those living entities, because These manus very often are members of the Brahma Kodya Vaishnav Sampradaya. They're part of the disciplic succession. They have more than just responsibility of material responsibility. They also have a spiritual responsibility. Imam vivashyate yogam proktivan aham av ihayam. Viveshvan manave praha manar ikshva kave brvit. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Vivishvan, and Vivishvan in turn instructed Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu instructed Ikshvaku. So there we get a hint. Powerful. They're serving Krishna by administrating the material creation, and they're also serving Krishna by being his spiritual representatives. So this is all fact. It's all happening up there in the sky, beyond the clouds. You can't see it. Prabhupada said, we quoted the other day, when you look up in the sky, you have a natural inclination. It just like, kind of comes to your mind, like, wow, the twinkling of the stars and the moon and the sun, and like, what's it all about? Why is it all there? What's happening? And naturally, you become inquisitive when you see the phenomena of nature. Naturally, one thinks, whose nature? Whose nature is Krishna's nature? So if you want to know, you don't have to look and just squint your eyes. Squint. What? No. You look into the Shastra. You don't look up. You look down. Look in the Shastra. Like Tirtharashi was looking at the Shastra today. His vision is impaired. His glass, he's looking. I was saying he's looking like this. You look in deep and within the Shastra, Guru Shastra Sadhu, then you get a very detailed description. It's very nice. It's mystical, actually. We have the common man is blocked. He can send his satellite, his Sputnik. It's an old Russian contraption. You can send out there and, you know, come back with some information, send some photos back to Earth, Mars. People are fascinated. Oh, put them on the net. Put them on the internet. Let's see what Mars... Just go to the shelf and take fifth canto Bhagavatam and, you know, you can see the whole detail if you're interested. We're not so interested, sort of. We're more interested in what lies beyond the creation. What is, not what is this world, what is the other world, the spirit, the real world. Paras tasma tu bhavanyo vyakto vyaktat shunatana. This world is sometimes manifest, sometimes manifests. Creation, maintenance, destruction. We're not so interested in that. We're interested in the world which is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. We study this world because it's Krishna's energy. So whatever is connected to Krishna, we have some interest. But we have our priorities. Because, you know, life is short. We have to make our priorities. Okay, it's Krishna's energy. But what is it? It's Krishna's inferior energy. And beyond this inferior energy is this superior energy. The spiritual energy. And what goes on there is far more interesting than what goes on here. Sometimes manifest, sometimes manifest, unmanifest. Dukalaya mashashvatam, it's temporary, it's full of suffering. You look at the news today in Mumbai, some terrorism there. Terrorists have causing so much chaos in Mumbai, attacking the hotels and killing the foreigners and attacking the train station and the hospitals. And some people are fascinated, and so we take a glance. But the majority of our time, Bhagavatam. Even if you spend your whole life reading the 12 cantos of Bhagavatam, you can't grasp it all. You try to get the essence. Haitakya patiyata yayatma shupashidati. That this unmotivated, uninterrupted service to Krishna, yayatma shupashidati, this will satisfy your heart. the heart's desires. This will give you full satisfaction. But still, we, for preaching purposes, we have to satisfy their curiosity. So it's not, sir, it's not mythology, as Prabhupada called it. It's mythology, Prabhupada said. It's not mythology. Of course, the Greek demigod stuff, that's mythology. I don't know. There was some connection between ancient Greece and India. There were trade routes open at that time, and I heard that there were yogis living in the mountains in Greece. So there's some connection there. So who knows where they got their concept of the demigods. But the narrations and the activities of the demigods as described authoritatively in Vedic Shastra is not mythology. It's all fact. The demigods are a fact. If you have the eyes, you can see them. We described it the other day. Difficult because very subtle. Previously, they used to appear on the earth when there were yogis, but now there's no yogis. Well, recently there's been the revival of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. And sometimes the demigods come. We've told that story many times in our Bhagavatam classes, how sometimes when Prabhupada was here, he would mention, oh, did you see them? Who? Brahma. Narada. They were dancing in the kirtan. Devotees are like, whoa. We couldn't see them. But Prabhupada could see. If he can see what is spiritual, he can see the subtle material energies as well, obviously. If you've got $100, you've got 50 and 25 and 30. So one who has that perfect vision, he can see things as they are. So these great devotees would sometimes appear because they're attracted to yajna. Wherever Vishnu or Krishna is glorified, that's where they want to be. Like people in the mode of ignorance, when there's a party which involves, illicit sex and drugs, intoxication, oh, they go. But finer people, gentlemen, refined for sadhus, they have their parties too. What's their source of their enjoyment? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. And just like you'll go a long distance to go to the party, Kartik, in Vrindavan. You'll go a long way to join the party, the Mayapur festival in February, March, in our Mayapur Chandradaya Mandir. You'll go a long way, at great expense and great difficulty for you. So devatas will also come from the heavenly planets to Sydney, where we're sitting today. They'll come here if they hear the sweet chanting of their Ishtadev, their worshipable Lord, Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Don't try to understand how they can hear the kirtan. Those things we don't know yet. And time will know these things. And time will know. But somehow they know. They know the kirtan's going on. They know. It's like last night, it seems it's a tradition here that the last offering is placed out in the reception here. I was finishing my rounds last night from 9:30 to 10 in the reception. And I don't know if it happens every day, but last night there was a big plate of Mahaprasad on the right-hand wall, on the railing on the wall, just telling you in case you don't know. The last time we did puris, sabji, sweet. We're just sitting there. And, one by one, I saw devotees coming down. You couldn't smell it upstairs, next door. And devotees have a sixth sense when it comes to the prasad. And one by one they were coming and they were like taking a little bit, some... I won't mention any names. Some of the boys took really big plates. And they looked at me, they said, sorry, Maharaj. I know, don't be sorry. Just get up for Mangal Arti. So it just disappeared. It's a sixth sense, something devotees have, the sixth sense. So when you're the devatas who are devotees of Krishna, they have the sense that when this prasad, what does prasad mean? Prasad doesn't just mean food. Prasad means mercy. There's all kinds of mercy in Krishna consciousness. And this kirtan of the holy names, this is the essential mercy. Prasad is the secret weapon, but the essential mercy of the age of Kali is the holy name. So devatas, they know. And when there's some really nice kirtan, kirtan doesn't necessarily mean the musical instruments are nice and the voice, but there's the purity of heart. Chanting for Krishna's pleasure. Chanting to glorify the Lord. This is coming from the heart of the bhakta. He loves or she loves nothing more than just to glorify their beloved. It's like a perverted reflection in this world. When a boy and girl fall in love, that first 6 or 7 months, that kind of, anyway, I won't get into the details, but they're always talking, she's so fine, she's mine, my guy, you know, they go on and on. Talk about something else. No, you don't understand. You know, it's just the perverted reflection. So in the true sense of the word of love, then always remember Krishna and never forget him. And you can always remember someone, never forget them when you love them. So when a devotee chants like that from the heart, to glorify the beloved, the devatas, they pick up, you hear? There? In New York, there's let's go. When they dance, they ask Prabhupada, what were they doing? Prabhupada said, they were laughing at you because you're such Kali Yuga devotees. That wasn't a critique, it was just an observation. They were trying. If at first you don't succeed, try again. You know, so, factual. They're there. Well, they're there when the yoga is being performed. And they're very powerful. Very powerful personalities. Just like Arjuna says to Krishna, this system of yoga which you have recommended, it's not practical. Because it means controlling the mind. For a conditioned soul to control the mind is not easy. Because the business of the mind is to search for pleasure in this world. So chanchala, he's never satisfied, so it's flickering, moving. So Arjuna says to control the mind is like trying to control the wind. Okay, that's a good example for the multitude of humanity, but there's one person who has full control over the wind. He's a jivatma. He's just like you and me. He has full control over the wind. Vayu. Ni problem. He has no problem with the wind. Surya, he has no problem with the sunshine. You think Indra has any problem with the rain? Full control. It's a powerful. You can hardly imagine how powerful he is. So when you read about them, if you're going through the Vedic literatures, you don't know what is the Grantharaj, the king of all scriptures, describing the Parameshwara Krishna, and you come across some of the activities of, you know, Ganesh Ji, Bhagavan, Surya, or Shiva. Whoa! People tend to take shelter of, to worship that which is more powerful. Prabhupada says in a purport in Bhagavatam in India, where this said during World War II there was a group of people worshipping Hitler. Right in the Bhagavatam. And it's crazy, of course, but they considered him so powerful because, you know, he was conquering Europe. And so if you hear about these powerful devatas, then you think, oh, I will. And if you want to worship, there's a whole section of the Vedas to worship the demigods, and you can get the benedictions. So we sometimes, you know, downplay that. Hey, they're, you know, they're just getting the material benedictions. But in one sense, it's intelligent. You know, you can take the stairs or you can take the elevator. So if you're in a hurry, you take the elevator. The stairs, 10 flights of stairs. So if you need something material, well, Vedic Shastra says, instead of working yourself to death in a factory, people in Vedic culture would worship a demigod who corresponded to their desire. And for every desire, there's a devata waiting to serve you, waiting to facilitate you. There's a devata. For example, I mean, there's 33 crores, so we could spend the next 6 months going over which demigod you approach to facilitate a particular desire. Because you have to fulfill the material desires. I mean, you have a body, you've got to take care of it. It's a valuable vehicle in the path of self-realization to Krishna consciousness. So, okay. If you're diseased, then you would worship the sun god. As we know, the sun is a source of good health. If you don't, you stay inside all the time and eat junk food and just watch TV, you become a couch potato, sickly, pasty, fat, lazy, sleepy. But if you go outside and you jog and you eat like fruits and vegetables and grains and you get some sunshine, not too much, even too much of a good thing's not good, except chanting Hare Krishna. Be careful with the sun here in Australia. We're just beginning our festival tour here. We're going to have our first Harinam in a couple of days. Uvaga, uvaga in Polish. Watch out for the sun. It's a killer. Skin cancer. But if no sun's not good either. Yin yang. Finding the balance in life. A little sun is healthy. So if you're sick, you've got a flu, you've got a hachoo, you've got a cold, hey, just go out in the sunshine. Prabhupada said that if a baby, little baby, this is good news for the mothers, if a baby, you put mustard oil on the baby and you put him in the morning sun for the first 5 years of his life, he'll never get sick. Mandalami. I don't know about this sun now. There's no ozone anymore in this part of the world. But in Indian Vedic culture, the morning sun is it's not too hot. It's a healing sun. The afternoon sun is a killer sun. Only mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the afternoon sun. And Hare Krishna is on Sankirtan. Or service, we will do. But the sun has a healing. So the baby, if they put mustard oil on the baby, put him in the sun, and mother's working and washing, and babies, you know. And the sun is healing, giving life. Like that. So if you're sick, it's good to worship the sun. And if you come down with smallpox, you can worship Mother Sitala. Not our Mother Sitala in ISKCON. She's a Vaishnavi, but the demigod of Shiva. And if you want to learn something, you can worship Sarasvati, or better, you can worship Hayagriv, like Pallad. He has on his altar a shalagram of Hayagriva. Very early in his career, he wanted a Hayagriva. Remember how much he wanted a Hayagriva? Because he wanted to learn the scriptures, and now he's studying in the university. So he's worshipping Hayagriv. Of course, that's Krishna. If you want a beautiful wife, then you worship Brahmacharis, cover your ears. You know, if you want a beautiful wife, then you worship Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva. And if you want it all, and you want it now, you don't want to go through 33 million crores of demigods. This is a long list, you know. And by the time you fulfill the list, you're 85 years old. What are you going to do with it anyway? So you want it all, and you want it now, when you're young and you can enjoy it. Then there's one mantra. There was a band, they had a song like that. I want it all and I want it now. This is like in the 80s or 90s, right? And was it, what band was that?
Queen.
Huh?
Queen.
Queen? Yeah. I won't ask you to sing the melody. I want it all. I heard it in the parking lot when I was shipping books. I want it now. Okay. So there's a way to do, there's a refined way to do this. Danam dehi rupam dehi rupa pati bhajam dehi. The mantra. Oh, worshipful Mother Durga Devi, please give me wealth, give me strength, give me fame, give me good wife, and Prabhupada says, handsome husband. If you're going to get a husband, you might as well be handsome. Right? Of course, it'd also be nice if he was rich. It'd also be nice if he was famous. It'd be nice if he was healthy. So you have to say the whole mantra. Danam dehi rupam dehi rupa pati bhajam dehi. Danam dehi rupam dehi rupa pati bhajam dehi. Wow! The prince on a white horse! So, people in Vedic times achieved their desires with less effort than we do. That's intelligence. Like Prabhupada said, there's a lazy fool and there's a busy fool. Neither of them are very good. Either you're a lazy person. You know? But you're a busy fool. You're not much better than this. Dry stool, wet stool. Oh, I stepped on wet stool. I stepped on dry stool. It's not so bad. Hey, it's stool. So the busy folks, they say, hey, you're lazy, get a job. Well, you're a busy fool. Because you're simply working for sense gratification alone, trying to fulfill it. You know, it's just dry stool. Sorry, sir. That's how we see it. So then there's lazy intelligence, and there's active intelligence. Intelligent. Very intelligent, using one's intelligence to achieve the facilities that we need. But better than active intelligence is lazy intelligence, like nowadays. You don't have to go and work. You know, you're an intelligent man, but you go out and you work very hard and you get the money pretty quick. But lazy intelligent, you sit down in the privacy of your home and you work on your computer and you do the same thing nowadays. People have their offices at home and they're working on the computer this is lazy intelligent. Not out there working so hard that... And then go in the mailbox and pick up the check. Lazy intelligent. So this... Worshipping demigods, of course, we don't ultimately propose that, but hey, you chant the mantra. You don't have to go out and work so hard. You chant the mantra. Danam dehi rupam dehi rupa pati. Like you see the typical poster in India with Lakshmi and all the coins coming down. Of course, we're simplifying it, because you do have to work, but. This is lazy intelligence. But most intelligent, someone who finds that the perfect formula, like Bill Gates, he just hit on it. You know, Microsoft, and it was needed, and he had the way to do it, and it's a simple way, and it just caught on like wildfire. Some people just find the right formula for success in so many. So, the easiest, most effective, and proper way to get these things is to worship Krishna. Nitya nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam, ekobahanam, yo vididati kamam. Out of all the eternals, there's one, Krishna, who is fulfilling the desires of everyone. If you just worship Him, you'll get all these facilities. You don't have to worship this devata, that devata. Just worship Krishna, because He's the chieftain, Ishwara Panama Krishna. Demigods actually are getting their powers from Krishna. He's the one who fulfills everyone's desire. These demigods are very powerful, but they're powerless without the grace of God. Powerless. What is that verse, Prahlad, about? Again, become a mouse? Punar Mushtika Bhav, that the sage gave the benediction to the mouse. And you know the story. He became a cat, then he became a dog, then he became a tiger. The tiger wanted to eat the sage. So he said, You rascal, you want to eat me? Don't you know from where your power is coming? Punar mushtika bhav.
Sweet, 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 sweet.
So these devatas, they're very powerful, but they're powerless without the mercy of Krishna. We have to tell people that, because in our Vedic culture, nowadays we could say Indian culture, still people are, they have the nice slick office and the computers, the Mac Pros, and the, you know, everything's really for the cell phones, but they still have a picture of the devatas on their stainless steel altar. These things don't die away too quickly. So let us tell them, sir, yo yo yam yam tanum bhakta shada yarchi tum ichtati. Krishna says, I am seated in everyone's heart as the super soul. And as soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so he can devote himself to that particular deity. Sataya shradaya yuktash tasya radhanam ihate. Endowed with such a faith, he endeavors to worship a particular demigod and obtains his desire. Then Krishna says, but in actuality, all these benefits are bestowed by me alone. So really, who's the fulfiller of our desires? Krishna. But not knowing that, people worship the demigod. And they worship. You see, like in Bengal, which is the home of the Sankirtan movement, isn't it? You could say, Mayapur's our home. Prabhupada said it. Bombay's my office. Vrindavan is my place of worship. And Mayapur's my home. Why? Because that's where Lord Chaitanya appeared. Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Shango Panga Shaparshadam Yagnai Sankirtan Prayar Yajantihi Shu Medashaha. It's the Yoga Pit, it's the place that God appeared, and it's the place where he inaugurated the Sankirtan movement of the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which is the Dharma for the saints. So it's home for us. So Prabhupada said, Bombay is my office, Vrindavan is my place of worship, and Mayapur is my home. Worship, we go to Vrindavan to worship, to offer our love. Worship means to love Radha and Krishna. But although Krishna uses the word worship in this verse, those who approach demigods are not actually worshiping. It's more like, in modern terminology, I scratch your back, you scratch my back. Eloquence is truth spoken concise. You make some offering, you try to please the devata, but you're expecting something in return. That's business. When you talk about worship, it's like, I know no one except Krishna as my Lord. He'll always remain so, even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me. He's always my worshipable Lord, unconditionally. To cure Krishna's headache, if I have to give the dust of my feet and go to hell, I'll do it so that Krishna will be happy. This is worship. People are not worshipping the demigods, it's business. I give you this, you give me that. There's no love involved. Like we often tell the story of the worshipper of the demigod Kali, who went to the temple and he told Kali, he said, Kali, I'm offering you this nice puja, but worshipping like this, and then Kali is giving some... How's the story go?
He had some financial trouble.
Financial trouble.
And he said, if you help me out, I'll come and offer you a buffalo.
Yes.
And so then he came next time with more financial trouble.
That's right.
Where's my buffalo?
Yes, so he was worshipping, but he was a poor man. So Kali said some compassion and gave her bhakta. And she kept saying, where's the offering? I'm fulfilling your desires, but where's the buffalo you were going to offer me? Where's the chicken you're going to offer me? And one day she said, hey, I've given you so much, you're my bhakta, you're not giving me anything, at least give me a mosquito. And that worshipper of God, he said, hey Ma, there's so many mosquitoes flying around this temple room, just take one for yourself. This type of mentality. There we go. So we don't advocate that type of mentality. We don't advocate the worship of demigods, number one, because it's business, it's not bhakti, and number two, it just involves getting a benediction, which is here today and gone tomorrow, and leaves you more attached to the material world than before. So therefore, Narottam says, Anya deva shrayanai, tomare kahinu bhai, hey bhakti parama karana. Hey brother, hey bhai, hey brother, I say to you, if you want to become a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, do not hanker for the benedictions of demigods. Because somebody, people may say, but you people also worship Krishna for material benedictions. I read the story in the Bhagavatam. Your Dhruva Maharaj, his mother, he wanted to get a benediction, he wanted to get a property greater than his father, so he asked his mother. Mother said, these things are difficult. You go to the forest, you try to find God. He went to the forest and he worshipped Krishna for a material benediction. And Krishna appeared before him to bless him. He was ready to bless him. But then he said, wait a minute, I changed my mind. I don't want that blessing anymore. What do you mean you don't want that blessing anymore? You worship me very nice. You approach me with a material desire, my dear devotee Dhruva. I'm willing to give to you. No, I changed my mind. You changed your mind? I had a change of heart. How's the song go? Stana bilasi tapasvisti toham. Tampaptavam devam anindu guyam. Kacham vichinvan apidivyaratnam swaming kitatoshmi varam nayache. Oh my Lord, because I was seeking an opulent material position, I was performing severe types of penances and austerities. Now I have gotten you, who are very difficult for great demigods, saintly persons, and kings to attain. I was searching after a piece of glass, but instead I have found a most valuable jewel. Therefore I'm so satisfied, I don't want any benediction. Now this is not, a unique case. We're all in the same position. Who in this room came to this movement in the mood of pure devotional service? We all came, we may have just come because of the colors, or the tastes, or the fun, or this. But we didn't come with a real pure motivation. No one approaches God initially with a pure motivation. Even Krishna says, I know the nature of my devotee when he first comes. He's looking for knowledge, he's coming out of curiosity, he's coming looking for some facility, or most of them come because they're out of distress. I don't care, he's come to me. It's like a mother. The baby comes, what's the baby doing? Passing stool and urine and slobbering. Sleeping. The mother knows the potential. Mother knows the potential. Like yesterday, I met Vamsi. What's his name? Vamsi Krishna? Just Vamsi Das. Vamsi Das. Vainaika's handsome little devata, devotee. I remember when I was here a couple of years ago, he was just like that in the diaper. Now a little boy is coming on the altar. He says, Daddy, there's my spiritual teacher. Looking to me, this guy's only five. He said, Daddy, there's my spiritual teacher. And he offers obeisances to me. Gives me some flowers. Here, spiritual teacher. And he looks at him. Whoa, the Sringadev. He's very scary. Do he run a kati poo? He's really scared of the poo. Not to me. I'm not scared, Daddy. Look, he has an axe. He cuts off the demon's head and it rolls on the ground. So in the beginning, at least we're coming to Krishna. And by coming to Krishna, those desires are purified. And we know what is right. We know what we really want. Therefore, the Vedas, if you have material desires, don't go to a demigod, because he'll bless you with that desire, but you'll just have a hankering left for more. But if you go to Krishna with the desire, what happens? Mystical. Akama savakamova moksha kamudharadi tivena bhakti yogina yashite purusha param. What's the translation again? Whether you are full of material desires, you have no material desires, you're desiring liberation, by all means approach the all good, complete personality of Godhead. What? Because why? What happens? When you come there with that desire, it just becomes purified. You understand what is real desire. You get the higher taste. You can only give up something when you get something. You come, Krishna pulled it. Then, hey, in the midst of just like Dhruva, hey, I was looking, the desires I had were like broken pieces of glass compared to the jewel of your association, Krishna. So you come with various distress. I've come here, of curiosity, I've come here for knowledge and for some facility. But then when you're here, what are you doing? You're taking prasadam, you're hearing the Bhagavatam. Wow, I never heard a philosophy like that. And you're chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. And you walk past the mirror one day and you look at your reflection. Hey, I'm smiling. You see a photo. Hey, I'm dancing. I'm 2 feet off the ground. I become a demigod. You've had a change of heart. How's the verse going? Yeah, that's a whole song by Mangalananda. I've had a change of heart. Yes. Wish to play another part. Rupa Goswami describes in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that one of the first things that happens when you take up the process of, I'm not saying you become a pure devotee, you take up the process of devotional service, is that you become freed from all anxiety. How is it? You're not a pure devotee, but you're free from it. Because you have detached yourself from the cause of suffering. You're not yet a pure devotee. But like you hold onto the live wire. Okay, just let go. That letting go, that freedom from the pain is not happiness. But it's a great relief. You're holding. I'm in ecstasy. Hello. That's not ecstasy that you let go of a live wire. That's freedom from stress. If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, just chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Following the four regulative principles, it doesn't give us ecstasy, it relieves us from suffering, because those activities in and of themselves are actually sources of suffering. We think we're enjoying. No, it's causing so much distress. So you just let go. You get some relief. If you want to be happy, you engage in devotional service. So, you can approach Krishna and then you'll wake up. You'll see, but wake up pretty fast, because to maintain material desires, even after hearing so much on the subject matter, is an offense. It appears that even if we do come to devotional service, it appears, according to that explanation, that offense of the holy name, that it appears that there's a great risk of maintaining those material desires even while being a devotee. You don't let go so fast. You don't have enough shraddha, you don't have enough faith. After 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years on your deathbed, you may still be holding on to those material desires, even though you've experienced the higher process. There's a warning there. It appears that material desires can stay with you even when you're a devotee. Is that true? For a long time. The man on his deathbed, when the king came in with the pretty girl, he didn't look at the king, he looked at the pretty girl. And he was in his advanced 80s. So we have to make a choice to cross over the line, like Davy Crockett at the Alamo. Of course, this is Australia, but anyway, he drew the line. You can leave, or you can stay here and fight for your country. So, you know, you draw the line. You want to come back to this material world? You want to transcend and go beyond? You have to make the endeavor. You have to cross over. You have to be judah vrataha. You have to be determined that within this lifetime, if not today, I should renounce this business and become fully Krishna conscious. Prabhupada told Vishnujana Swami, he said, you've had so many lifetimes trying to fulfill these desires. You've given your life, so many lives, to Maya. Just make an experiment and give one life to Krishna. But give the life to Krishna. Atmanivedanam, full surrender. Don't just make a show of it or a pretense of it. Don't just dabble in devotional service. If you're going to do it, go all the way. Give one life. Atmanivedanam, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Shmaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandham, Dasyam. Atmanivedanam. Just make an experiment. Because so many lives have been serving the senses. Let us give this Rishikesh. Let us give our life to the master. Let's just experience. See what happens. Hey, you've had so many lifetimes, and there's the possibility of having a multitude of lifetimes ahead. Just make an experiment. Give this one life to Krishna. As Prabhupada says in that famous tape, I don't know where, fully surrender. Fully surrender. Just try and see what happens. You will not be disappointed. There's no pure devotee who's ever said to us, oh yeah, but I'm a little disappointed. I'm a little disappointed. I got to the top. Not like, you know, the boss gets to the top. Yeah, I'm up here, but I'm all alone. I'm so lonely. Lonely at the top. No. If you fully surrender to Krishna, yāyātmā śrīpasīdati. So we don't, you know, the demigods, we don't, but neither should they be disrespected. They're doing that. It's actually a service they're doing. It's kind of like a thankless task. Like being a temple president is a thankless task. I was temple president for 5 years at New Mayapur. It's a thankless task. As soon as you, manager means you have to take decisions. Yes, no, black, white, this, that, and you're going to have friends and enemies. So be kind to your temple president. These devatas have a thankless task. Actually, someone asked me one time, why doesn't the Lord just manage it himself if he's capable? If he's managing the spiritual world, it's kind of an automatic pilot. It's all a nectar. Why doesn't Krishna just manage the material world? Because he's not interested in this position. He doesn't really want this position. The devatas have a tinge of desire to control in the name of service, so he lets them do it. Just like we've told the story of our... In American history, we have... Huckleberry Finn? Oh, yeah. Tom Sawyer. Tom Sawyer, his dad said to him, look, you got to stay home, son, and you got to paint this fence all around the property. This big white fence, wooden fence around the property. But you can't go out and play with your friends. So, no, Dad, I want to go play. No, you stay and you... And his friends were all down the road laughing. Ah, you have to stay home and paint the fence. He said, no, hey, this is fun, you guys. You don't know how fun it is. And he was painting and singing, and they came along and they said, really? Can we do it? He said, no. Please let us paint the fence. No. Please, Tom, let's paint. No. Gotta give me a dollar. They gave a dollar. Then he went fishing. And he had a big thing of money, and they painted. So demigods have a desire, so Krishna said, alright, you do. He just wants to dance in Vrindavan. But he checks up on him. Indra gets out of hand sometimes, way out of hand. And sometimes there's no one qualified to be Brahma, so he has to accept the post himself. So in conclusion, we understand their position. We understand our relationship to them. But we can approach them actually, especially the prominent ones like Shiva, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. Because you see that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you read how many Shiva temples Lord Chaitanya went to. He went to plenty of Shiva temples. So we worship Shiva because, as we've discussed many times, he's the greatest devotee. We can also worship Shiva's wife, Katyayani Mahamaye Maha Yogin Yadishvari Nanda Gopa Sutam Devi Pati Me Guru Te Namah. O goddess Katyayani, the gopis said, O great potency of the Lord, O possessor of great mystic power and mighty controller of all, offer my obeisances unto you. Please make the son of Maharaj Nanda my husband. The young girls of Vrindavan. So we have our demigod worship also. But it's in line with pure devotion to facilitate. Not that we're worshipping Durga for a handsome husband. We're worshipping... We may appeal to Durga Devi for the most handsome husband of all. Krishna. He's most charming. He's famous. He has the most money. He's very wealthy. And he's... Could you say the most Krishna conscious? He is Krishna himself. But having him, you have everything. So he's the best husband. He's the best child. He's the best friend. He's the best lover. So worshipping or approaching the demigods will facilitate that param gati, that goal. Then there's nothing wrong. But that is our, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, that is our understanding and our relationship of the devatas. And that was the subject matter of today's verse, the demigods, the devatas. Gantara Shimad Bhagavatam Ki.